Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Big Kahuna Podcast. With myself, Byron Kenny.
And me, Conal Dillon.
We have a special episode for you today, guys. We're going to be talking about one of the most influential characters in modern history. One of the biggest directors of all time.
Mr. Steven Spielberg.
MC Spielberg. The dude. What can we say?
Best intro yet, I think.
We're just excited. We're excited to be here. Oh my God.
Don't frame me with that now. No, don't. Just keep running, man. What's wrong with you?
Okay.
Took us long enough to do that intro.
Okay. What are we talking about this week? I almost died there.
Spielberg.
I almost choked my own tongue there.
Good.
We're talking about the guy, the dude, the Don.
I think everybody knows him. He's, if you don't know him, you're going to know his movies.
Yeah, will we start with that? I'm going to calm myself down. I was a bit excited there.
I don't know why. To even like...
Let's talk about Steven Spielberg. I don't even know how to describe the man. The guy is 77. He was born at the end of World War II. Born this December, 18th of December, 1946. He's 77.
He was born into a Jewish family with a mother... who was an artist. She played piano.
Okay.
And a father who was an engineer. Who wanted him to pursue engineering instead of filmmaking. But they decided to encourage his artistic side. And now we're left with Spielberg now, I guess. They gave him his first camera. They used to... Oh, they were always on the road. They never really stayed in one place as a kid. Yeah, that's it. And he'd just go around the country. And whenever he saw something interesting, he'd film it.
Cool. Talk to me, when I say Steven Spielberg, what do you think?
I just think of the 80s.
The 80s?
Yeah.
Really?
We got Indiana Jones.
Yeah, that was his decade.
Has to be.
And the 90s was his decade.
The 90s, 93, we'll get onto that, but that's one of his
crowning years. I never knew that before. I'm learning a lot about the guy in the last few days now.
Same.
I think his effect on Hollywood has been unparalleled, to be honest.
And to the sci-fi world, really. He's really got... He loves a bit of sci-fi himself.
Sci-fi, war films, just... But generally, I think, before we get into the filmography, he knows how to strike that emotional tone.
Like, bang, yeah.
You know what I mean? He knows how to engage with the viewers and get those kind of emotive characters, I think. And really easy to identify with characters as well.
Yeah, he keeps his movies simple, but, like, memorable.
He does keep them simple. There's no, like, you know, there's no massive crux, or there's no kind of twist in them, or any kind of, manipulation in them. It's very simple storylines told as well as they can be, really, you know?
Yeah, well said.
Also, with some of the best composers, you know.
Yeah, he's worked with some...
The greatest actors, you know. He's got that special...
he probably has the most, like, we'll say, like, movie hooks, you know, soundtracks.
Yeah, 100%.
In Hollywood.
He's worked with the best, like John Williams. We have a fact about him coming up. George Lucas, the dude.
We've got a few there.
We'll talk about his filmography first. I just want to get this out of the way. This is absolutely mental. I mean, I just picked off some of his biggest films. The list is a page long here. Let's start off with 1975, Jaws.
His first feature film.
Mm-hmm. 1981, Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark. 1982 brought E.T., Extraterrestrial.
Shabby.
What a game changer that was. Temple of Doom, The Goonies, 1985. Last Crusade, 1989. Mm-hmm. Hook, 91. We're moving into the 90s now. That famous year, 93. Jurassic Park and Schindler's List. That's a mic drop.
You can't just throw that in there, man.
We'll talk about that later on. That's crazy. Saving Private Ryan came in 98. So there is a bit of a gap there, you know? Between...
Well-deserved?
Well-deserved, yeah. Catch Me If You Can, 2002. The year of our Lords. The year of our birth. War of the Worlds, 2005. Munich, 2005 as well, I think. That's crazy.
Good year, yeah.
In 2011 came War Horse, moving into the 2010s. Lincoln, 2012. And I think the most notable... he's had the Fabelmans as well. Have you watched that?
I haven't watched any of the last three you've said. Like, the more recent ones since 2010's on. I haven't really been watching this stuff.
Bridge of Spies came in 2015, which is a brilliant film. Yeah. That was the last one I watched as well.
Yeah.
What?
He's definitely slowed down in recent years.
He's 77, like, Jesus. But what a productivity, like, what a record.
He was born for it, like.
Incredible, really.
So I have a bit of here on about his history. So after graduating from high school, Spielberg moved to L.A. all on his lonesome, and he applied to University of Southern California Film School, very prestigious, three times, and he was rejected. So then he applied to California State University, where he was eventually accepted. But then a job opportunity arose with the one, the only, Universal. He took that as an intern, and he was just working away. Sometimes he slept in closets, in executive boardrooms and stuff like that.
I reckon those things are true, though, those little tidbits, those little facts.
Well, they always seem to be around that time, you know?
Slightly embellished, maybe.
I don't know. You take it with a pinch of salt, like. I believe it.
Do you?
It was a wilder time back then.
He slept in a club.
Yeah, he was an intern. They probably didn't get paid much back then. He was doing what he could. He was hustling. You got to hustle in Hollywood.
Yeah, for real you do. Like, nobody makes it there without a huge stroke of luck or
some sort of story, anyway.
It's always a story, man. any more facts on the dude?
No. Just on his movies, really, you know?
That's what we'll get on to, I suppose. I don't know if... I think we should do, like, a ranking directors type thing, but... just to put it lightly, this guy's well up there. Well up there in terms of some of the best films ever made, you know? I think in terms of, like, revolutionising film, you know what I mean? Like, revolutionising sci-fi.
Sci-fi, yeah. And just
especially
the way...
sci-fi and adventure and fantasy, like, with... And I would say the top three that I can think of are E.T., Jurassic Park, and Indiana Jones. Like, in terms of, like, subverting kind
His use of props was revolutionary.
Props, yeah, yeah. Props, set design. Obviously that's not him. Like,
but yeah, it was like direction. Early CGI. Could you say?
Yeah, I don't know if there was that much CGI in those films, which is kind of amazing. You know, like E.T., like as you say, set design and costume design.
It's huge.
And that was what kind of stood out for watching the likes of Indiana Jones from an early age.
Yeah, maybe that's what influenced Tarantino. You know, the way he doesn't like using CGI. Very prop oriented, well,
But that's what I mean. He's very formative. Like, he's a lot of his stuff. These great directors we talk about now would have taken from Steven Spielberg, you know. And it's incredible that we're still alive and that he's still making films. You know, I mean, we might watch them the way we might watch Martin Scorsese or something, but this guy's productivity is off the Richter scale. Like, it's more than Scorsese. It's more than. You compare this to Tarantino. Compare this productivity to Tarantino.
It's just the bulk of absolute classics. It's hard to compete with.
Yeah.
Because you know a lot of big directors like Nolan, Tarantino, you know, any of these boys.
The contrast as well, like, I mean...
Yeah, it's like they might have five great movies, but this guy's got at least 10.
Yeah. Like, you go from, like, biopics like Lincoln to Jaws and, like... Indiana Jones, like the contrast, the difference in creativity is, that's really commendable as well. No?
Yeah.
It's not just one form of filmmaking. It's not rooted in reality. It's not rooted in fantasy. It's a mixture of both, and it's been able to.
It's hard to do.
Yeah, it's been able to intertwine both and put your stamp on it as well. I was reading some of these films. I was like, how is this the same filmmaker doing these films? We talk about 1993. I mean, you said something there.
Yeah,
before we came on air.
So you were, what, Spielberg directed movies released in 93. So he directed Jurassic Park, regarded as one of the greatest summer blockbusters.
Mm-hmm.
And then he moved straight on to Schindler's List. And then I saw this one factor. Well, he was shooting Schindler's List during the day and he was editing Jurassic Park at night. Spielberg said it was a bipolar experience. With every ounce of intuition on Schindler's List and every ounce of craft on Jurassic Park.
What do you think that means?
Well, intuition with Schindler's List, like, he has to get it right. It's very factual. It's historical. And we'll say, when he says every ounce of craft with Jurassic Park, that's his artistic flair going right in there. And he was editing as well at the time. He'd already shot it. Yeah. So he's putting the movie together.
But it feels like Schindler's List is like reactive. It's like
emotional, you know,
pouring your heart and soul.
And plus, he is Jewish, like, so it is close to home. And I read there that he didn't take any money from filming Schindler's List. He donated it all to charity for
really.
Yeah, for like Holocaust survivors, and they're like testimonies. Like, there's a charity for that.
Wow.
For preserving them. So he donated all his earnings for the movie for that, which is pretty cool.
It's up there in terms of years. I'd put it like Russell Crowe when he did Gladiator and A Beautiful Mind in the same year. Like that kind of, like that kind of work rate and that kind of drive for greatness, you know?
Like, but, was it Tom Hanks in 95? He did Toy Story and something else?
Yeah. There's a few, but like, I suppose it's one thing being an actor and just absolutely dogging it out, you know, like,
yeah, it's
relying
different
on that kind of innate ability you have, but being a director and having to oversee everything in a year, like,
yeah, like there was, like, when he was filming Schindler's List and doing Jurassic Park, like, there's no break, there's definitely no breaks in between that. Like, usually when you go home from set you might forget about it, but he was straight on to editing Jurassic Park day in, day out. And they're completely different movies as well.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's what's so, that's the point of difference with I think Steven Spielberg, is the ability to make different types of films. I kind of finished about talking about him as a director.
You need to go on to his movies, because it's going to be hard to fit him in, like.
We did a top five this week, a ranking Spielberg.
We'll save that till the end?
We can do that now, but we can talk through each film as we do.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Because we did with Tarantino, because he's so few films in comparison, we just did all of them. But with this one, I think it was tough to narrow down with five now.
Yeah. You know? I think this is the first time we've actually had different lists, to be honest.
I think so.
So do you want to work away with your number five?
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, work away, Keith.
Okay. There's a few of these that I was like, I just had to put them in.
Like, there's a lot of ones here, like, in my one, definitely sentimental value.
Really?
Yeah. You know, watching them as a kid is brilliant.
Yeah.
Can't really get over it.
First one I put in, just because it was revolutionary, and it is so entertaining. Dorum.
Dorum. Dorum. Jaws. What a classic.
Jaws, yeah. I put in Jaws, 1975, the first kind of the breakout hit. Fun fact before you get into it. The director, Spielberg, he laughed at John Williams' initial score. He brought him the score of Jaws, and he laughed. He thought it was a joke when he played him the two notes.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Talk about, like, Jaws is, yeah, it's one of the first kind of, he doesn't do any horrors, but, you know, it's scared the absolute living bejesus out of people when that came out. Like, you know,
it
what
did.
I mean? We can't really fathom that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose it's a testament to really, like, but I think it was just so new. Maybe out being out in the ocean and actually filming out in the ocean, there hasn't been much done at that time.
It was the first film to be made on the open ocean. Like,
oh,
that,
yeah.
Which is another fact.
I've one here. The film was shot on location out at sea, which caused massive problems due to the unpredictability of conditions. If a ship appeared on the horizon, it ruined the shot, and they had to wait hours until it was out of frame.
That's crazy, like.
Quote, I was insane. Spielberg later said.
But that's what is so good about Spielberg. It's like revolution. Like, like you can look at so many of these films. They're like the first to have done it, or
yeah,
you know, the best to have done it at that time.
But this film was raw. Like, he hadn't finished the script throughout filming. He was just writing it when he went home. Then
you find
the next
sometimes
scene,
the best stuff, like, it's just bang, it's just
off the cuff.
There,
you know,
it spanned five sequels as well.
Was it work? Was it the one Jaws, or was it different types of Jaws's?
I don't know. I think Michael Caine was one of them. And
he
was one of the
biggest
regrets of his career.
Don't quote me on this, but I think it got to like number three and they changed the shark or something.
Really?
It's a different shark.
Changed the shark?
I know, the old one died. Jaws died and another Jaws came along.
It was like fungi and dingle.
Have only ever seen the first one though.
Yeah.
The first one. I think I've seen bits of the third years ago.
But. Yeah. But it is such a classic, like, and our parents would have watched. I suppose it is a more of a film for our parents, like, but. And I would love to watch it. You know, it's one of those films you want to watch
when
it comes
out at the time, yeah.
How it kind of scares people and how it, that initial impact it makes. It is kind
because it is, like, it's a real thing. People do get attacked by sharks every day, like, you know. And it's definitely,
yeah, and it's spurred, like, generations of people actually being really afraid to swim, like, in the open ocean, and or even just go to the beach, like. Like, how many films can you say that about? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose, like, when it came out... When it came out in the States, a lot of people, especially if they live in inland, they probably haven't seen the sea before, so now they're fucking petrified of it. Like, they probably wouldn't want to be going near it.
Yeah.
Even if it's a lake or something, they might not want to go in.
There's not too many films you can say that about, really, is there?
Not really, no. But I have another one here. So the white shark was a mechanical puppet created for the movie. It hadn't been tested properly in salt water. And when they tried it out at sea, it sank again and again.
Yeah, there was a lot of malfunctions.
The crew named the shark Bruce after Spielberg's lawyer. Spielberg had his own nickname for it, the Great White Turd.
The Great White Turd. That's the most American thing.
Fix that damn shark. Keep sinking, Willis. You know.
Yeah, great film though. I must give it a watch. There's so many of these films I want to give a watch again, you know what I mean? Consider how great they are, like, I mean, Jesus.
Some I haven't seen that are
if you look at the list now, how many do you want to watch? Like, how many jumping out at you?
Well, I know you won't want to rewatch it, but I want to rewatch Tintin.
Tintin. Is that on your top 5?
No, honorable mentions. But I haven't seen The Terminal with Tom Hanks either.
Yeah, I want to watch that with Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Only bits on TikTok. It's always just one of those ones that pop up.
Yeah, it seems like an interesting premise as well. It's on Netflix, I think.
Yeah, it's a real story. Like.
Yeah, so he gets... he's a foreign national. But
and he lands in the airport. But by the time the plane left and landed, his country was dissolved or something. Yeah, so he didn't have a nationality. So he couldn't actually leave the terminal. So he stayed there for like a year or something.
Yeah, he was living in the terminal, like.
I thought it was, oh, that's funny, yeah. And then I found out it was real, and it was
crazy.
Gobsmacked.
And he's, like, scrimping day to day just to get by.
Yeah, they didn't really help him much either.
But they knew he was there. We need to watch it first. We need to watch this film first.
Yeah, sure, we've been in airports before, struggling. And the flight might be 3 hours delayed.
Imagine living there all the time.
You swear it was doomsday.
Oh, shut up. Yeah, I know, it was actually pretty bad.
You were crying in the corner to console you, play some cards.
I had a tough time at that time. I don't know.
Suppose it was like 30 degrees as well, like.
There was no food or anything in that place.
At the Kip.
That was the worst airport, the Zante airport. Zakynthos. That was a terrible
Greek airports, man, they're Kips.
But you know in a lot of airports there's a lot of space, like to
it was absolutely wedged and there was no food either.
I mean, this is one of the premier holiday spots for people our age. And the terminal is one tiny terminal, like, and everyone's wedged in together. The flights are getting cancelled.
Left, right and centre. And there's no one to talk to. They don't speak English. They're sweltering out in the heat. And they're giving you guff. And remember the first time we landed in Kevos? We had to wait out in the tarmac for like an hour before they let us into the terminal, which was another hour for lines. And we were boiling out there.
Yeah, but at least Kevos was Corfu. Like, that's a major island, you know. Like, it was a major airport. You know what I mean? It seemed a bit more.
They want to get their act together.
I feel like, was there even planes at that Zante airport? It was so.
It's like a ghostland, man.
Primal, like.
It was.
Jesus Christ. I mean, pushing people fucking to get on a plane, like. Anyway, let's get back to the matter at hand.
Right, my number 5.
Right, your number 5.
Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah, it's a great classic. It has to be up there. One of the most watchable films, like, you just.
Yeah.
Like, bang, you're in.
But I love this about this movie, you can. Film 4 classic, you can just...
Is it a Film 4 classic?
Yeah, it's a Film 4 classic. Okay. It's always on a Film 4. You can just hop in at any time.
Yeah, that's so true. That's
and you just
so
you
true.
Just know you just instantly know what's going on. Yeah, and it's like, alright, Tom Hanks, go catch Leonardo.
Yeah.
You see, do your best, kid. True story as well.
True story, yeah. A lot of true stories here.
Yeah. I mean...
There really is.
I just love the way he... Catch Me If You Can, he was like so fast-paced. And the dialogue was so witty. And the narration then, and Christopher Walken running around the gap.
Christopher Walken?
He was
his
father.
He's a dad. He's really good.
But he got just up to so many little adventures, and he was such a little con man.
I love a film like that where... Where he's getting up to little escapades, and he's chill, like, he's, you know, he's breezing through it. But I just don't know how you could deal, like, personally, I don't know how you could deal with that kind of
imagine going
stress.
Into the bank and trying forging a cheque. But that guy was just doing, he was doing that routine every week. And then he was just, I suppose it was another thing for the time. Like, you can't just blag your way into becoming a pilot now, can you?
No. And becoming a doctor, or was it like a surgeon?
An actual, just because he watched a bit of you know, Grey's Anatomy for the 70s or whatever, you know.
But I've heard, saying it's a true story now, I've heard that a lot of that, most probably, of it isn't true, like, that it is.
I can believe that, yeah.
Massively embellished. But, like, you can't blame a filmmaker for that, like, you know what I mean? They're gonna read a script.
He's gonna take the bare bones of the story and make it his own.
Absolutely. Whoever wrote that is gonna make a story of it, you know? If you hear people doing something so out of the ordinary like that, you're gonna make a film about it. And you can't blame anyone for that, really, except for the guy who probably, like, I think he made the story up himself, like, on top of being a con man, he actually made probably the story up.
But they did remain very good friends until one of them, I'm not sure now, died.
What was he into the film again? Not to ruin it now, but like,
Leonardo DiCaprio's character was under, like, he had to work for Tom Hanks's character. I don't know the names now, but he had to work for, instead of being in prison, FBI, he had to work for the FBI or whatever to catch other con men.
He could see the patterns and, like, how to catch them, yeah.
Yeah, but he was, like, the best in the world at, like, checking forgeries.
Mm. But then he lets him go. He lets him go. He says, you'll be here at work tomorrow or something.
Yeah. I know, I think he does come back the next day or something.
And he uses a bit of reverse psychology. I think that was nice. Like, it was a nice way to finish the film.
Oh, and he came back and he's own accord.
Yeah. They're all waiting, like, and then he's there, you know. Yeah, he tries to escape on a plane.
But he just thinks about it and goes back.
Yeah, Tom Hanks catches him, and then, he's like, you'll be here at work tomorrow at 9 o'clock. But, like,
there was that one scene where he did escape from the plane through the landing gear.
Mm.
He escaped through undid a few screws in the toilet and snuck through there.
Oh, yeah.
How real is that? I'm not too sure.
That's bold, like. But it makes a great film.
It does.
That's somewhere on my list as well.
All right, move on to your number four.
Number four. The first film on this list that I cried to when I was a young fella. Do you want to guess it?
E.T.
Yeah, E.T. Drew Barrymore's first film. She's the young sister of Elliot. Who was the main guy again? Look up the cast there.
All right.
But I remember watching, like, the... What are you saying?
Nothing. Please, like...
Sorry, please. Please, Mr. Computer Man.
Thank you.
I remember watching, it was like one of these Instagram reels of the...
Henry Thomas?
Is that E.T.? Is that Elliot? Yeah, Henry Thomas. Of him doing the... Have you seen that one of him doing the audition?
Oh, yeah.
He's crying. Brilliant,
and
like.
They offer him the job on the spot. He's like, you got it, kid.
You got it, yeah. It was such a great film. It's always been a great film, you know? It was kind of hard to put the finger on why, you know? I mean, it was kind of a new slant to the sci-fi genre.
Yeah, I suppose I suppose a lot of kids at the time, if you were similar to Henry Thomas's age and you're watching that, it's like, oh... Wouldn't it be so cool to have a
alien best friend? Yeah, but then it's like, he's your best friend as well.
But then he has the government to come in after him. He's like,
And it's so sad, like.
Yeah, it's tough.
You feel like, I think the beauty of these films is how you start to empathize with such an alien
creature.
Life form, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And that's the challenge, and that's what
it's E.T. the emotion does. In his movies.
Yeah, that's why E.T. does so well. On top of, you know, the character design is really cool as well. Like, I mean, the whole E.T. phone home and the finger and all that. It's weird, like, you know what I mean? It's kind of out of the ordinary as well. But it's kind of endearing as well. It's not like you're not disgusted by E.T. or the creature, like.
No, he's kind of cute.
He's kind of cute.
In his own little way.
Yeah. But brilliant writing, like, and... Yeah, another example of, like, the kind of emotional aspect to these films.
Yeah, he's good at, like, creating, like, the big bad. Like, the government and that was quite intimidating when they came over. They used the force to come into his house and try and take him away.
When was the last time you watched that film?
Oh, God. When I was, like, 11, maybe?
It's been a while, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was 11 when I watched it last.
I remember we watched that in school. I think it was junior, so we'd do, like, a comparative or something.
Okay.
We're watching in class and, like, I hear people like, oh, this film is shite, like, Man, it boiled my blood. Like, they wouldn't give it. They wouldn't sit through it, like, and actually give it the time of day to actually watch it, like.
You know. Watch the movie, man.
But, like, yeah, of course, if you're coming into class and you're, like, watching it in little snippets like that,
you're
not going to be like, but, jeez, this is an all-time classic, like. Do you know what I mean? And it was the same a few years later then. Or maybe it was the same year, actually. We watched School of Rock. And that was really... I heard the exact same little whispers probably from not the same School of Rock,
no, thank you. Oh, my God, man. I love that movie.
Almost lost it. But, like, how dare you show that disrespect to E.T.? I mean, if that's not a staple of, like, every young person growing up, like, sci-fi enjoyment. Oh, my God. Like, every child has to watch E.T., you know what I mean?
Vent, man, vent.
Get it out. Look at those, like, tear jerkers of, like, Marley and Me and stuff like that, you know what I mean? Like,
I haven't seen it.
Oh, my... Bruh.
Marley and Me, man. Who's this? What are you talking
about? Marley and Me with Owen Wilson. Come on, man. E.T., Marley and Me. I'm trying to think what else. Bridge like to Terabithia, man. That was a sad one.
I think I've seen that movie.
But yeah, I love E.T. It hits that kind of perfect emotional tone. And is, yeah.
It's early as well.
Yeah,
did he make that?
That was E.T. 1982. So,
not too shabby.
One of his first big films. And I squeezed a tear out at the end, definitely. It is quite sad.
So does he reunite with the... I think was there two?
E.T. Goes Home.
But was there another movie made?
I don't know, actually. I wouldn't think
I think so. There was a number two. I'm not sure now. Let me check. Nah, I'm wrong. Anyway.
We'll get on to your number four.
Uh-huh.
The Goonies.
I think we'll start off I think I have a little clip from The Goonies. Cool. Oh, I do.
Is that the first clip of the day?
First clip of the day.
Go on.
The Wishing Well.
Martin Sheen,
that's President Kennedy, you idiot!
Well, same difference! I mean, he played Kennedy once.
said by Charlie Sheen.
That's cool. That's not Charlie Sheen.
It is Charlie Sheen.
Let me see.
He's got one of the most recognizable faces. Look at him.
Let me see. Man, that's not Charlie Sheen.
That is Charlie Sheen, man. How much you want to bet?
I bet you anything, man. I know who that is.
It is. Look at him. You cannot tell me that isn't Charlie Sheen.
Look up the cast of Goonies, please. This guy is also in Stand By Me. I forget his name. Teddy, what is it?
It is. Look, right there.
That's not... What's his name?
That's Charlie Sheen, whatever. Oh, come on. That is Charlie Sheen. Look at him.
It looks like Charlie Sheen.
Face. That's him.
Oh, what's that guy's name? Corey Feldman.
Charlie Sheen.
Come on, man. That's Corey Feldman.
That's Charlie Sheen. I don't care.
Stubborn.
I know what this conspiracy
Corey
is against
Feldman.
Me.
I see it, though. I'm going to give you the benefit
of course you see, because they're the same person.
Do you know who Charlie Sheen's brother is?
Martin Sheen.
No, not Martin Sheen. You know the guy from Breakfast Club? I don't know if you know
the bully lad.
The jock, Emilio Estevez.
Oh really?
Yeah, I think he didn't want the father's name, so he took the mother's, Estevez.
Interesting.
I love Martin Sheen as an actor, but anyways, get on to
Charlie Sheen. What a man in The Goonies. Anyway, back to The Goonies. What an all time classic.
Go on.
It's one of my earliest memories watching a film like it's definitely The Goonies.
Mm-hmm.
And that what was it, what do they call your man, the big scary looking lad?
Oh, I don't know, man. Chuck,
he scared the bejesus out of me.
He was scary, yeah. But you know who scared me the most in that film was the old woman.
Yeah. What was her name? Fucking
language,
sorry, my bad. Oh yeah,
she was what scary. Else was she
in? Mama Fratelli. What else
yeah.
was she? I recognise her from somewhere.
I don't know what else she's in.
Ooh, and like they did that little heist. They did that heist at the start of the movie, introduced them all.
It was a really good start to that film.
But when they got, it was a fat one. What was his name?
Get your names, man. Come on. Charlie Sheen.
He's not in this. Oh, Chunk. Oh, he lost a load of weight. That's why I couldn't see him. Jeff really? Cohen. Yeah, Chunk. Mm. You know when they kidnapped Chunk when they went to that abandoned bar?
Yeah.
Up in the woods, and they took him down to the basement and it spooked him with your man.
It's a bit of a
Slot. They called him Slot. Yeah, but so it's a cool premise for a movie, you know, like kids off on an adventure, seeking the lost treasure.
Yeah, I love that, yeah. That always works for me.
You know, yeah.
That's done well, then.
And then we had Josh Brolin, Thanos running around the shop.
Yeah. What was his character in the... He was kind of...
Brandon. He was just like... Books, no, he was the older brother.
Oh, he was, yeah.
He was kind of like... I think he fancied your one Andy in it. Kerry Green.
Well, you got all the names.
I got all the names now, man.
Oh,
Francis Fratelli. He was in Sopranos.
Which one is that?
It's not here.
Yeah, he's in... he's in Memento. Have you seen that with Christopher Nolan's film? He's a bad
Memento, no, I haven't Memento, seen that, no.
Brilliant, yeah. One of his first films.
Brilliant. He was Ralph. Ralph in Sopranos.
Yeah, you'd know his face now if you were listeners. You'd know his face.
But I think we'd just talk a bit about Josh Brolin and his career after Goonies.
Yeah?
No Country for Old Men. Deadpool. Oh,
it's been top of the pops now.
Sicario.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved him in Sicario.
Yeah, brilliant. Brilliant.
Anyway, The Goonies.
The Goonies, yeah. Good shout. What's my number 3? It's already featured. Catch Me If You Can.
Catch Me If You Can, yeah. That's a good shout.
Yeah.
I think I'll move on to mine then, I suppose.
Yeah, go on.
One of the best war movies ever made. Saving Private Ryan.
It's not even in my top 5.
Yeah, well, you just don't know. Have you even seen that movie?
I must say I watched it and I was really looking forward to it. And it kind of...
What?
Didn't really meet my expectations.
How?
The first scene is spectacular.
Though apparently they had...
I will watch it again.
They had veterans on set.
Yeah, and they couldn't watch it.
And they couldn't watch it because they were getting cool. PTSD from it.
Not cool, but like that is incredible. Like,
yeah.
It is so realistic though. Yeah. Jesus.
And that's another point on Spielberg's use of props and his set design.
Well, that one is particularly spectacular. Like, I mean, spectacular and harrowing as well. Like,
yeah, he really blew it out of the waters with that one. Like, I suppose you really have to get D-Day right.
Yeah, I think if there's one historic...
To portray it like this one big moment in human history.
Reconfiguration, like, that is one you have to nail. Especially considering what I said before, like, that was only a few years before this guy was born, you know what I mean? Like, he's living in the aftermath of that. People growing up with that shit.
He's probably like, especially his father is definitely knowing people going over.
Yeah. Yeah, that scene is really spectacular. And that's the film I just...
It was a long scene as well. It must have went on for 15-20 minutes.
I just find it kind of falls off after that. But maybe I was expecting it to be like that the whole film. You know what I mean?
But I mean, like, they had the firefight there on that hill where the medic gets killed.
Yeah, that was a good scene.
That was harrowing, man. Like, oh. The one guy didn't want to get killed.
Yeah.
And there was the standoff in the town, very heroic, at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Action-packed. And you remember that your man's, one of his comrades was fighting this Nazi on top of the stairs and... He was about to stab him, and he could have stopped him, but he just walked over him.
Yeah.
Do you remember that scene? He's like, "Oh, I can't do this." He was in shock.
You think it's one of the best war films ever?
Yeah, it's definitely up there for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I just watched it as a kid, and I was gobsmacked.
Mm.
Brilliant, and the story as well of the four brothers all dying, getting Matt Damon. Was it Matt Damon?
Matt Damon, yeah.
Bring Matt Damon back home.
Mm.
Hashtag.
Yeah, no, as I keep saying, I'll definitely need to watch it again because I think I was expecting a different storyline, but it is really just like, go and save that guy, saving Private Ryan, you know?
Tom Hanks is brilliant in it, like.
Yeah, as usual.
Yeah. He rarely put the foot wrong. Was he in Bridge of Spies as well?
Bridge of Spies, yeah. I'm just trying to look through these. So Bridge of Spies, Catch Me If You Can, Saving Private Ryan. That's some big, big films there. You know what I mean? And I'm sure there's more after that. That's just some of the big ones that I've kind of picked out. But they must be one of the biggest. The Terminal as well, as we said.
Yeah.
So they must be one of the biggest kind of actor-director duos out there, you know? Kind of up with De Niro and Scorsese and, you know.
I think that relationship goes under the radar, though.
Think so?
I really didn't think about it before, to be honest. But like,
no, man, that is one of the big kind of duos in Hollywood.
But I didn't realise, to be honest, like, Spielberg directed half of these movies until I really looked at it.
Yeah. I didn't realise there was that many. I knew, like, he had a hand in a lot of things, but, like, they actually have direct. And we talk about, like, we see some of the produced films there.
Yeah, he's produced. He was he's one of the executive producers on Transformers.
Really?
2007, yeah.
That's mental.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, I know what success that's been like. And I have a funny one for you. He was the first person to buy the rights to Shrek.
No way.
In the mid-90s, yeah. And he was thinking about directing the film. And he would have taken a completely different stance on the movie. It would have been completely different if he decided to direct it. But he decided not to. And he handed it over. So.
Wow.
We could have had a completely different Shrek.
It wouldn't like that.
No. I doubt we would have had Smash Mouth.
Shrek without Smash Mouth.
Go away home.
Wow. But yeah, I wonder, like, he obviously has foresight to be able to see, like, something like Shrek would be a hit, you know what I mean?
Like, maybe it wasn't his thing, like, he hasn't ventured into animation.
Yeah.
Throughout his career. Probably just isn't his thing, to be honest.
Mm.
But, yeah. Moving on to your number two, is it?
Number two, we're getting there. Yeah. No surprise here. One of the all-time great fantasy films, whatever you want to call it. Jurassic Park.
Amen. Classic.
It's not on your list, is it?
No.
I genuinely love this film. I genuinely think it's incredible.
I didn't love it as much as a kid now, to be honest. That's why I didn't put it in. Like, I was real sentimental about this list here. But I'm not taking away from the movie. Like, it's brilliant.
I think Spielberg is one of these where you watch so many of these films as a kid. I think you need to rewatch them as an
adult. Because it is different, like, you're more impressionable when you're a kid watching these movies.
Yeah, and you expect different things, you know what I mean? Like, you just expect kind of gratification, like instant kind of hits of whatever. But you can appreciate the finished product as an adult, obviously, a whole lot
more. Yeah, like the use of, like, the just the dinosaurs themselves, like,
yeah.
I suppose he got the experience of Jaws using those kind of...
Yeah.
How did he even do that? They must have been props.
Props.
I suppose, when was it made? 93.
Yeah, it's probably like clever...
A little bit of CGI, maybe.
It's a clever kind of film framing as well. Like, if you have like a Velociraptor maybe just catching the head or something, like, you know, that
yeah.
kind of design.
Those Velociraptors,
they were so menacing.
They were, weren't they? And they're so rapid. And like, oh, there's no yeah. way I'd be able to escape them. Maybe a T-Rex.
They scared the shit out of me. Like, more than... I think in the second film... Did they introduce it? They have the T-Rex in the first film, don't they?
Yeah.
The Velociraptor scared me way more.
And what are the big tall ones with the necks? Like, Pegasaurus or something?
Brontosaurus. Brontosaurus, yeah. And then there was
I think they're the fatter ones that looked like elephants.
No, you know, Brachiosaurus. Brachiosaurus was the long neck ones, and then Stegosaurus was the wide ones with the
Lisa Simpson thing.
I used to have all these often. I used to be obsessed.
This dinosaur kid. Yeah.
This film actually got me obsessed. I forgot about this. It got me obsessed with dinosaurs. Like, I had an encyclopedia at home with dinosaurs. Like, I used to learn that shit off, man. Like the flying pterodactyls.
Pterodactyls, yeah.
Like, oh man, I was obsessed with that stuff. Like, it was so cool, you know what I mean? And the fact that, like, we don't know what they actually look like, you know, because we can only see their bones. But I do remember distinctly, yeah, the Velociraptors and that scene where they're trapped in the facility, like,
yeah,
two kids.
Well, it is a big topic, and I don't think it had been touched on much before. Oh, just
that's the
dinosaurs in general.
Like,
yeah,
he's the first
man to it. Do an idea.
Yeah. Let's make a friend out of an alien. You know what I mean? Let's talk about sharks. Let's go out in the ocean. Let's trap a load of dudes on a boat.
Let's make a movie about archaeologists. You know,
that one was genius. I mean, I don't think Indiana Jones is in either of our lists, is it?
Just hold up a minute, man. Okay. We'll get there.
I was joking. We need to do some justice to Jurassic Park first, though.
Unfortunately, we don't have any scenes for this.
You have a few more clips coming up, though, don't you?
I played two already, haven't I?
One or two? One?
Oh, I have two coming up.
Okay.
For better movies.
Yeah, I think Jurassic Park.
Jeff Goldblum,
yeah. Jesus.
But it was just... Like, what even is the premise of Jurassic Park? Like, they have... did they create them in a lab, was it? Were they able to reproduce dinosaurs or something?
Yeah.
For, an actual dinosaur zoo?
It was a zoo, yeah. It was supposed to be kind of a theme park type thing where you can go and watch the dinosaurs.
I've definitely watched the newer adaptations.
Yeah, I like the first one.
Yeah, it was good. It actually was.
It's not as good as the original. It's definitely not. No. But yeah, they're, it's supposed to be a park, but then everything goes haywire. Start attacking the humans.
The T-Rex going around the place. Did he start that thing where was that in the movies, like, stand still, the T-Rex won't see you?
Oh yeah.
Did he start that?
I think that might must have been. You know, it's Richard or David Attenborough's brother as well, isn't that Richard Attenborough? He's the old.
Oh, he's the guy with the owl head.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool crossover. You know what I mean? But yeah, Jurassic Park. I think it's just one of those staples of, especially as a kid, it's one of those staple films, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't talk about.
I think it's almost up there. Maybe for some people, it might be one of those Christmassy movies you might dip your toes into.
Sentimental type thing. Not sentimental, but just you remember watching it for the first time, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to butt in here with a cool fact that I missed.
Go on.
For Jaws.
Jaws, you're going back to Jaws.
Yeah, well, I just missed out on this one. So Spielberg wanted to direct a Bond movie.
Go on.
But this was early doors. He'd only just done Jaws.
Uh-huh.
So he was a young filmmaker in the 70s. Spielberg wanted to make a James Bond movie. He unsuccessfully pitched ideas to Albert Cubby on two separate occasions. And even made a reference to Bond in Jaws. When Hooper cuts the shark open and pulls out a Louisiana license plate beginning with three familiar digits. 007. It's a good little sprinkle of a little
festival. That's cool.
Bond reference. Jaws and Bond, same universe.
This guy's been everywhere, man. Jesus.
Maybe we'll have Bond fighting Jaws someday. Idris Elba. Oh, you know who's off for the next Bond? Or for the next Batman, sorry. Replacing Ben Affleck is... You know your man in the series Reacher?
Yeah.
I think he's leading the way for that.
He'll be good, man.
He will be good, and he's done a bit of superhero work before, so he looked good in the costume, and he's a massive, he's a tank.
Yeah, he was in Hunger Games, so, wasn't he?
No, he wasn't.
He was in Hunger Games, Catching Fire. Yeah, he was.
Who was he in Catching Fire?
He was District 1 or 2.
Oh, you're right, he was.
Yeah.
What do you call them, the elites, is it?
Oh, what's their names? The Careers.
The Careers. Oh, you cunt. That's a good one.
But he's kind of like the father of blockbusters. I'm just thinking that, you know what I mean? You know the way, Avengers really captures that whole thing. But
they've changed the word blockbuster, I think.
Yeah, but this guy started off and he did it so well.
And he's gross crazy money in his time. I think I saw that there was...
Yeah, but gross. He probably didn't have half the budget these guys are working with. You know what I mean?
Yeah, when he did change his list, he only had a budget of 22 million and it grossed well over 300.
Wow.
I think I saw a fact there was... he grossed in his career over $10 billion.
Jesus.
Not too bad.
Not too shabby, man. Go on, what's your...
Anyway.
Number two. Up She Flew.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Really?
Indiana Jones. Yeah, yeah.
I spoke too soon before, so...
I couldn't put all three in there. Yeah. So I said I'd sprinkle one in.
I'm glad we got Indiana Jones in there.
Jeez. As a franchise, you have to get it in there,
We couldn't go without
it. I actually was watching Raiders of the Lost Ark there a few weeks ago.
Yeah?
I didn't finish it, but... Oh, yeah.
You started it?
I was watching it, and I just kind of butted in. Yeah. So I watched, the middle hour.
You can't help, when that's on.
Yeah.
It's cool as shit.
Harrison Ford.
Yeah. You know my abiding memory of that is the melt, the face melting at the end of the film.
Mm.
The Nazis, the face melting. How gory that is.
Yeah, but I like the way he was just this charismatic, professor.
Yeah.
And then the Secret Service come in. We need to hire you. Maybe to find the Lost Star.
Turns out to be like.
It's really cool, like
pseudo James
Bond. Yeah, exactly.
It's cool, like it's always a cool premise. But then I just love the stories. Like the stories are so good, you know. Like
yeah, and they really go into depth with all these like ancient,
mythical
lost
stuff. Yeah.
Texts and archives and all this sort of crap. It's pretty cool.
That religious and that historical element, like the historical significance of the Nazis as well. Like yeah. That makes it more tangible. That makes it more like, oh shit, I'm invested now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because like, oh, the Nazis, we got to stop the Nazis from getting this new super Aztec weapon, whatever.
It's
like you know.
Say about Hellboy, like bring it back to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's got that relevance beyond just, oh, some random nihilists want to, you know, destroy the world. It's like, okay, well, it's the Nazis.
It's put a real twist
we're
on
rooting, we're rooting against those guys now.
You yeah, you're automatically rooting against them anyway.
It's like America. But then, yeah, old-fashioned kind of technology and, you know, like the lasso, isn't that his famous weapon?
Yeah. But, like, he goes back to all... But he does all these different kind of ancient civilizations, like in the Temple of Doom.
Yeah.
Which is... Looking back, like, I'd say almost Temple of Doom, I prefer to The Lost Ark.
Really?
Yeah. What was the name of the young kid? He won an Oscar there for Everything Everywhere All at Once. And he was in The Goonies as well.
Oh, man. No, his name has eluded me.
Don't worry. I'm the names guy around here. Oh, right.
Computer.
Give me a second to pronounce it. Kei-Hee Kwan.
Kei-Hee Kwan.
Kei-Hee Kwan. He was, Goonies. What else has he got? He kind of stopped there for a while. He was under the radar. He was in Loki, Goonies. Yeah, no, he literally stopped from doing Temple of Doom straight onto the Goonies in 85, and he did nothing, really, until 2022 for Everything Everywhere All at Once.
He was a big child actor, like.
Yeah, big time. But he's one of the voice actors in the Kung Fu Panda 4 coming up.
Really?
Yeah, so that should be interesting. Man. I'm really looking forward to that, actually.
Yeah, I'd be unreal.
They're finishing off the franchise of Kung Fu Panda.
Oh, are they, like? They said that the last time.
Cry about it, man.
I'm not crying, man. I'm delighted.
You'll be shedding a tear at the end of that movie.
Oh, I will. Why don't they just keep it going, like?
There's a time for everything, Connor.
You know it will be back as well? Guardians of the Galaxy will be back.
They're probably doing, like, 5 years before... The events of like the third one or something. Like another side adventure.
I think so.
I don't know if they could bring him back like after saying that that's it. Like, you know, at the end of the last one.
Yeah, well, money.
Well, I suppose it wasn't really that. They were saying that they were taking a break from the whole... Yeah,
like, nobody died.
Yeah.
Go back to...
So we'll see.
Go back to Indiana Jones.
Yeah, they rated that last
arc. What do you think of Sean Connery's one? The last one, kind of the first three.
Which Shia LaBeouf? Oh, he was in the Temple of Doom.
No, was it Temple of Doom?
I'm kind of... I do mix them up. But there's the Holy Grail, is
holy,
it?
No,
it
was...
Well, they were after the Holy Grail.
The Last Crusade. That's
the Last
the
Crusade.
One.
Oh, he's good in that.
Yeah.
He's the perfect Indiana Jones father as well. He was really cast well for that movie.
You know, he was an asshole. Like, in real
life, seen a few interviews. He was old-fashioned, per se.
Serial misogynist, like.
Yeah.
Like
one way to put it, like, I guess.
Don't be smirking at me. Barnes' old-fashioned views will come out now.
I did see an interview there, like, and he was just like, how he doesn't like golfing with women.
Oh, yeah. But I've seen far worse ones than that. Where it's like,
I didn't want to delve into that. I don't want to ruin my image of him, to be honest.
Yeah, don't. Yeah, Indiana Jones. Another one I need to give another one.
I have a clip here from The Lost Ark, actually.
Cool.
Tennis. Just what does that mean to you, Tannis?
Well, the city of Tannis is one of the possible resting places of the Lost Ark.
The Lost Ark?
Yeah, the Ark of the Covenant, the chest the Hebrews used to carry around the Ten Commandments.
What do you mean, the Commandments? You're talking about the Ten Commandments?
Yes, the actual Ten Commandments, the original stone tablets that Moses brought down out of Mount Horeb and smashed, if you believe in that sort of thing.
That's cool.
I love how interested Indiana Jones is. In all this historical artifacts and stuff, and he's just schooling these CIA boys who came to him.
It's cool, man.
You know, it's brilliant.
Go on, so number one.
I think we have a similar number one here.
We have the same one.
Before we move on to that, I've got another fact for you. Jeez, I'm rolling them out this week.
Wrap it up, Matt. Come on. 10 minutes.
You're lacking behind there, man.
We've anyway. 10 minutes.
Oh, do we? Okay. Mm-hmm.
We'd talk about two films before we go.
Spielberg and his pal, George Lucas, would often go on vacation with each other when they finished a movie. In May 1977, Spielberg had just wrapped production of whatever, some movie there. And George Lucas had his own little space movie coming out. I wonder what that was. It was on this holiday that Lucas pitched Spielberg his idea for a whip-cracking archaeological professor and his adventures searching for mythical artifacts. Lucas uttered the famous words to Spielberg, "I've got something better than Bond."
That's cool.
Yeah.
It's not better than Bond, though.
Indiana Jones. James Bond. They're up there. They really are.
Go on,
anyway, let's go quickly. We'll throw out our number one.
Drum roll.
Schindler's List.
Yeah. The film of supreme quality on this list. Like, the film.
A black and white film, yeah.
Took my breath away for it. I said there was two films on this list that I cried to. This one I bawled to.
I was there in Krakow. I went to Schindler's Factory.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was very interesting. It was eerie.
Did you feel the weight of it?
Yeah, like, because they had all the old textiles and all the sort of machinery and all they were working on. There was, like, carriages in the factory that they put in there and stuff.
Mm.
It's creepy, like, you can almost sense it. I went to the old Jewish ghetto and all this sort of crack.
Mm.
It's pretty cool.
There's a bit of a trio on that film. Ralph Fiennes, Ben Kingsley, and our own Liam Neeson.
Represent.
His best role. Such a shame that he hasn't been able to kind of reproduce those type of performances. But this one is just...
Michael Collins,
yeah, you could argue that. But not, you know what I mean? Like, this is near perfection. Like, this film is brilliant. We've got a... Ralph Fiennes is
the perfect, like, SS commander.
Oh, he's so...
He's intimidating,
scary,
yeah.
Like, yeah.
Ruthless.
Ruthless as shit.
I actually have a scene here from when they just met, like, for the one of the first times for lunch.
Go on.
I go to work the other day. Nobody's there. Nobody tells me about this. I have to find out. I have to go in. Everybody's gone.
No. No. They're not gone. They're here.
They're mine!
Oof. What's the Calm context? Down, Liam.
What's the context of that?
I wasn't really listening. what they're talking about, I think your man came in and he was kind of taking over Liam's factory.
Mm.
But if for anyone who doesn't know, Schindler was... He was the head of this factory that was manufacturing weaponry, I believe, for the Nazis throughout the war. And he hired only Jews just to, like, harbour them throughout the war. And then when the war was finished, he was actually hunted for being, like, a Nazi criminal. But then all the Jews that he protected throughout the years defended him.
Mm.
Like, he was hiring them. He wasn't executing any of them. He was trying to give them, you know, humane working conditions and all this sort of crack. So
it's
quite the hero, really, yeah.
Ben Kingsley is a very accomplished performance as well. He's a Jew in it, and he kind of becomes Schindler's friend and sees everything that's going on. You know, he's got that kind of omniscient presence about him in all his performances, Ben Kingsley. But
time is up.
We've got a bit of time.
What's a bit of time?
We've got 6 minutes.
Ah, perfect.
It is, yeah. I mean, I cried at the end. I have no shame in saying that when Schindler breaks down at the end of the film, you've kind of said the plot already. But I think most people know the plot.
Yeah.
Like, if you haven't seen this film, man, it's so I remember the night I watched it. Like, it was like 12 o'clock. I used to stay up to all hours back when I was like 13, 14.
Just watching movies.
Watching movies, man. That was a safe place. You know what I mean? And threw it on at 12 o'clock. And...
Jeez, you must have been there till all hours.
Yeah. Like 3, 4 in the morning.
Like, I was kind of put off by it before because, like, oh, some old movie in the 90s made black and white. Oh,
and, like,
I never watched
enough,
that. Yeah. But if you give this movie a chance, it'll capture you within a minute.
It'll hook its claws in. I won't let you go for it. You'll be thinking about that film for a long time.
Yeah.
This shit happened.
Because it's historically accurate. Like, it's crazy.
This shit actually happened, you know, not too long ago.
Mm.
And like some of the scenes of violence and they're visceral. And
the camps.
They're tough to watch, you know. And like all great films, it's not supposed to be easily palatable. It's not supposed to be, you know, all just easy to watch.
Yeah, and as we said, like, Spielberg is Jewish himself, so it is close to home.
Yeah.
It's pretty remarkable.
But it's also just a human story.
Yeah.
And it's beautifully done. And a worthy number one, I think, for both of us.
Amen. To the great Steven Spielberg.
Yeah. I think we'll do a director's episode someday where we kind of compare them.
Yeah.
But we need to do a few more before then.
And move on to movie of the week real quick.
Did you watch it?
Yeah, did you?
Yeah. Brilliant.
Good. Adventure Time.
Adventure Time.
Adventureland.
Big Bahuna,
yeah, Galette. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, it was really good.
I'm not really sure about your man Eisenhower, though.
Eisenhower. Not Eisenhower, man. It's the president of the United States.
I wasn't really sold on him.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think he suits those kind of teen flicks. Those coming of age films.
I think he does perfectly. He's like really awkward and you can see like he's got that smartness, he's got that wittiness.
He's wishy like.
But he finds his confidence throughout the film. I love that. Like.
It reminded me a lot of The Way Way Back.
It was better.
A lot of similarities. I don't know.
I think
there was a bigger budget.
Bigger budget and there was more to it. Like, I mean, it wasn't,
I suppose,
just
there was a young Ryan Reynolds in it.
Yeah, and it wasn't just it wasn't just the angst. It's not just like frustration throughout the film, which you get from The Way Way Back. It's like you're dealing with different kind of, you're dealing with, first of all, I loved about the film is the editing side of it is a lot of these films are like cut. They're cut to shit, you know what I mean? But it lets the scenes draw out. I love the way it's shot.
Mm.
I love the colour coordination and stuff like that. Like the periphery of this film, also the soundtrack is, oh, it's banging, man. It's got like The Cure, it's got David Bowie, to name but a few. It hits that 80s retro vibe on the head, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I also just love like this great humour, and it is a proper coming of age story, like, and it is similar to The Way Way Back, and like he goes to work in a theme park.
Yeah.
And that's cool, you know what I mean? But there's one thing about Jesse Eisenberg. Kristen Stewart. Oh, she drives me around the bend. We should go back and do a count on that film. The amount of time she touches her hair. Like, that's one of her things when she's acting. Like, she's such a poor actress that, like, she has these little, like, crutches, like. So she'll, like, touch her hair.
I think she just plays to her niche.
There's no niche here, man.
She does. Like, she's basically the same person in fucking Twilight, like.
She's not as bad as Twilight now.
I think they were doing it on purpose in Twilight.
Yeah.
Because Robert Pattinson is a phenomenal actor. And he's just there, you know.
Robert Pattinson has grown a lot, though. Like,
I suppose that they were young, like, but I think they were told to, like,
be really, really, really terribly, like, astronomically bad.
That's what they were going for. It had to have been.
But Kristen Stewart kind of just, she doesn't ruin this. Like, this film is top film for me.
She was cast perfectly in that role.
You know, it's the director of Superbad.
No.
He directed Adventureland.
Pretty cool.
You can see the similarities in the humor as well. Like Bill Hader is in this film. I like the.
Who was the? He ran the park. What's his name again?
That's Bill Hader. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Christian Wiig as well.
Good cast. Like, serious cast.
That was a good cast. It's got the teenage angst, but it's also got the. I think it's just got the fun and the. Kind of like figuring yourself out element as well. Like,
they're always brilliant movies to watch as well. Like, I do recommend watching this one,
especially when you're this age. I think, you know, and you're in college. You know,
yeah.
You can really identify with the struggle, but also the moments of kind of
the freedom.
Freedom, yeah, and independence, newfound independence. I really enjoyed it. It hit the nail on the head for me. And I like Jesse Eisenberg. I back him. I think he's very good.
Whatever you say, man.
Go on, give it a rating.
Oh. 8.3.
8.7.
Ooh, a high one. I like it.
I don't know. I just love these films. I could watch it in 10 years and it'd be like a 7.9. But for right now, it's an 8.
So yeah, 8.7.
8.7. And you had 8.3.
Yeah. Not too shabby.
Suppose that rounds off this week's episode. A bumper episode.
Yeah, kind of. I suppose it ran over, like, but... Yeah. Justified for...
Yeah,
the big man himself. The
man that's in it.
The spiel.
It's our 12th episode. We hope you're enjoying the journey. If you've been listening this far, we appreciate it a lot. Keep listening. We're enjoying the journey. We hope you are too.
Well said. Movie of the week for next week.
Yeah, so keeping on the coming of age buzz.
Yeah, I'm kind of enjoying it, to be honest.
The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Why not?
Mm-hmm. Emma Watson. Okay,
let's reason enough.
It. Let's go. Let's do it. We're gonna release some movie of the week reviews
on the.
We're gonna release them the day before. Our releases on Fridays.
From yeah, now. So keep an eye on a Thursday for the yeah. Instagram for the
just to get you guys. A bit juicy before we.
Mm,
before we stick it in. All right. Thanks very much. I've been Conor Muldoon.
And myself, Byron Kenny.
The Big Kuna Podcast, over and out.